on The Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
2 days from now is the 500th anniversary of the event that kicked off the Protestant Reformation. A Reformation that was not by design, at least not by human design. A Reformation that was not the idea of the man who did the event that we're going to talk about today. But although we are going to talk about his life and how he was uniquely positioned to change the church and the world. We're talking about Martin Luther, the man who rediscovered God and changed the world. New book by Eric Metaxas. It's from Viking, and Eric is here with us. This is not his first time with us. He is the number one best-selling author of If You Can Keep It, Bonhoeffer, Amazing Grace, and Miracles. He's also the host of the Eric Metaxas Show, a nationally syndicated daily radio show, senior fellow and lecturer at large at King's College in New York City. You can check his website, Eric Metaxas. That's ericmetaxas.com. And Eric, thank you so much for making time to be with us on this momentous occasion.
Oh, I am thrilled to be with you. And of course, it doesn't get much bigger than the 500th anniversary. It's an amazing, amazing thing that it's in 2 days marks exactly 500 years since a moment that hopefully we all learned it about it in high school. But I have to say, I didn't realize even slightly the significance of what happened 500 years ago until some friends of mine kind of pushed me to write a biography about Martin Luther, and I have to say I'm very glad I took him up on it because it is just a huge story, an very entertaining story. And what happened 500 years ago is also so significant. I confess ignorance in that when I went into this originally, I really didn't understand how huge it was what happened 500 years ago. So I'm thrilled that in my book, Martin Luther, I get to tell the story. It's pretty dramatic.
Absolutely. The life of Martin Luther is dramatic. One of the points that you make early on in the book is that there are seven kind of legends that have grown up around things that Martin Luther did during his lifetime. And we, through the lens of research, we find out that these things didn't come to us exactly without some embellishment from the admirers of his time. And in some cases, from his foes of the time, but nonetheless, the facts are there that without Martin Luther being in the right place, the right time, with the right motivation, with the right understanding of the Bible, none of this would have happened. And I guess we'd all still be speaking Latin on Sunday mornings.
You wonder. I mean, you hate to play those games, you know, to try to figure out what would have happened if he weren't born, or what would have happened. But it really is one of those extraordinary stories that we all should know. And, you know, usually something like an anniversary helps refocus us. Because mm-hmm. some of us, I think with people like Martin Luther, you have a dim sense. Many people know it very, very well. But most of us have a dim sense. I think I know what happened, but I don't know the details. But when you really get to know the story, it is a wild, wild story. And so many people have bought the legend that when I went in and did the actual research, I was quite astounded to see that a number of things that everybody's sure happened actually did not happen. And so it's kind of fun to find out, okay, what exactly can we say? What did happen? What is true? What is not true? What's been exaggerated? I mean, his life is so wild that it doesn't need any exaggeration, to be honest. A very colorful figure. This book was a lot more fun to write than my Bonhoeffer book. A lot of people know me from the Bonhoeffer book,
right.
But that's a hard story. I mean, when you're dealing with the Holocaust and the Nazis, it's in some ways depressing and difficult. It ultimately is a very beautiful story, but this story is it's just way more fun to read. And you know, I think that there are fewer Nazis in the story, and Nazis are always bring a story down.
Yes,
it's
indeed
depressing, but the story of Luther just is. It's pretty wild, and as I say, he was such a colorful figure. He kind of makes it entertaining for good and for ill.
Oh, absolutely. Well, one thing, the contrast between the two, Bonhoeffer, we know, died a martyr. Amazingly enough, I think one of the most amazing things about the life of Martin Luther, not the most, but one of the amazing things, is that he managed to live to be in his 60s and die in his bed. There were an awful lot of people for an awful lot of years that were perfectly excited about the idea of roasting him alive, as they had done two of his pre-reformer predecessors, Jan Hus in Bohemia and William Tyndale in England.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary thing to think that Luther survived. I mean, he was not expecting to survive himself. You know, when you go up against the power of your time, I mean, there was, you have the power of the church and the power of the state combined against this man, and all he has on his side is God and truth. And I think if you ever need proof that going with the truth can be a good thing, the story of Luther is kind of that. He said, I don't care what these men can do to me. I feel a compulsion to speak the truth, and if it means I go to my death, I go to my death. He really was convinced that he would go to his death, mm-hmm. because so many before him had gone to their deaths, burnt at the stake, and so on and so forth. But Luther really was, he cared about what was true, and he feared God more than he feared what they would do to him. He thought, how could I ever, you know, say what they want me to say, knowing that it's not true? So he's just a rare figure in that sense.
One of the things I like about Luther is that he bases his decision to go up against indulgences, which he does not realize, but actually kicks off a firestorm. It really kicks over the anthills, we say in South Alabama. The reason that he decided to do so was not because the indulgences weren't coming to his church or something like that, but because, amazingly enough, he read the Bible. And that seems like a pretty ordinary thing today that, oh, well, he had a Bible and he read it. That's one of the things that makes Martin Luther significant, because really, prior to Martin Luther, the new technology of movable type that came about a few decades before him really burst into flower as a result of the writings of Martin Luther.
Yeah, it's all, you know, it's interesting the way history works. If not for the invention of the printing press, Luther's story would be dramatically different.
Yes.
The difference between Luther and Jan Hus and Wycliffe and Tyndale is that Luther, when he said the things that these men had said before him, he was able to write them, and other people would print what he said. Even if he didn't want them to print it, they would print it, and they printed it in German. Luther was able to write really to the common man. He didn't just write to his fellow scholars in Latin. Even though he could debate on the highest theological level, he had an incredible talent to speak to the common man, and to speak in German to the common man. And so his writings, by dint of the printing press, circulated all around Germany and even around Europe. So the ideas got out there and caused people to talk about them. So even if he had been killed, his ideas were already out. People were already accepting them, arguing about them. Very, very different than the story of Jan Hus, who was, of course, burnt at the stake, and the stories of Wycliffe and Tyndale, one of whom was burnt at the stake. I mean, it really is interesting how technology can change the story, and that's exactly what happened here.
He also had another factor going for him, and that was a matter of nationalism, because the Holy Roman Empire had been pretty much ruling Europe since Charlemagne, around 800 or so. And now, in the early part of the 16th century, we start to see the emergence of nation states and people who are saying, we don't want some guy in Italy telling us what to do about every single aspect. The German elector, you know, this having Frederick as a protector makes all the difference too.
Well, this is the thing. There's a lot to it, and I hope if people read the book, it all becomes clear, because I want all this stuff to be clear, and there's a lot to it. But it's fascinating how these things work together. You do have the emergence of what you just said, nation states. Suddenly Germany is thinking, wait a minute, why are we sending all this money to Rome, to the Vatican? Why are we paying these huge taxes to the Pope? We're 800 miles away, and we don't like what he's doing with the money. There's corruption. There's incredible wealth in Rome and in the Vatican. And, you know, Germany didn't have a ton of money, and it's just going away 800 miles over the Alps to Rome. What do we do? You know, and so they started playing politics. They started saying, wait a minute, we're going to flex our political power. We have political power. And it really becomes a very complex story. You have, for example, Luther is protected by his local prince, the Prince of Saxony, Frederick, you just mentioned, protects Luther because he really felt Luther wasn't getting a fair shake. He thought, if we send Luther to Rome to confront the charges against him that the Vatican's putting against him, he'll probably be burnt at the stake. He could at least get a fair hearing here in Germany. So he kind of pulls rank, or I should say this prince, Frederick the Wise, knows that he has leverage with the Pope, because the Pope wanted his vote in electing the next Holy Roman Emperor. It gets really complex and fascinating. And so because of that, Frederick is able to say, let's have this important confrontation between these leaders and Luther. Let's do it in Germany, not in Rome. And so it happens in the city of Worms, or as the Germans say, Worms. We say Worms, and these annual meetings were called diets. So this was the Diet of Worms. You hear this in high school or whatever, and you say, what the heck does that? That's the funniest thing.
You just
thing.
Laugh.
Like, yeah. Make sure... Yes. Make sure you remember it for the test, you know, the Diet of Worms. And the fact of the matter is that Luther, because he was confronted in Germany, he escaped with his life. He would not have escaped with, I shouldn't say he would not have, but he likely would not have escaped with his life if he had to go down to Rome. All kinds of interesting things coming into play, because the world of 1520, when all this stuff was happening, was changing dramatically from where it had been a century before.
Now, and we're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Eric Metaxas, the number one New York Times bestselling author of If You Can Keep It, Bonhoeffer, Amazing Grace, and Miracles, and his brand new book, Martin Luther, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World. It's from Viking Press. One of the things that sets Luther apart from many of his peers is that he didn't just read books about the Bible, which was the normal way of doing things if you were a monk in those days. He becomes a monk, he becomes a priest, he becomes a Bible professor, all encouraged by his kind of his mentor Staupitz, and then put into a position where he's going to preach in a church and he's going to teach about the Bible. So Luther actually gets a copy of the Bible and reads it, and when he does, he discovers the Bible doesn't say anything about indulgences. The Bible doesn't say anything about earning heaven. Instead, what it talks about is grace. And he's startled.
That's a big one, right?
Yeah, because he's been trying so hard to earn heaven all along, and then all of a sudden he realizes, I was wasting my time. It's done.
That's right. It's kind of an amazing thing, because first of all, if people are just interested in history, this is some of the most colorful, entertaining history. You're learning so much about so much. I was fascinated about the interplay. The king of England comes into the situation.
Right.
King Henry VIII starts arguing with Luther. You have all kinds of things going on at the same time. So it is a fascinating history, but it's also the ultimate human story, because what human being is not dealing with these questions of God? You're dealing with the question of, is there a God? If there is a God, what do I do about God? Do I earn my way to heaven? Do I have to do this and not do this and do this and not do this? And it's kind of one of those situations where you're trying to figure it out. And everybody in that day said, the best thing you can do is go to a monastery, pray hard, fast, do all these things. And Luther says, I'm in. I don't want to risk anything. I am going to become a monk, and I'm going to pray harder and do all these things because I fear eternal hell. Everybody, you know, feared hell. And he thought, I'm not going to play games. I'm going to do everything I can do. And so he does everything he can do. He goes to the monastery, and he spends years praying and fasting and confessing, driving his father confessor, Johannes von Staupitz, crazy, because he's confessing incessantly for hours at a time. And finally, von Staupitz says to him, look, Luther, if you don't come in with a serious sin, you know, you're driving us crazy. You're confessing every stray thought. Luther was a man on a mission, and his mission failed. He could not get peace with God. He could not feel like God loves him. So at the end of the day, he figures, maybe I can find the answer in the Bible, which nobody was reading except for Luther. Luther really had an opportunity to study the Bible the way nobody had, because as we've said, it wasn't widely available. It wasn't a thing to do. So he starts reading the Bible, hunting, as it were, for the cure to his disease. Is there some place in the pages of this book an answer for me? And it really is crazy, because when he finds the answer, It's the opposite of everything he has believed up to that point. He has believed that you earn your way to heaven. You don't do this, you do this, you do more of this, you confess when you do this wrong, you do that. And he realizes, wait a second, somehow we've missed the actual answer. In the Bible, it tells us that God gives us a free gift of grace. He already did everything that's necessary. Christians believe that Jesus on the cross paid the debt. So for you to try to add your pennies or your dollars when the whole thing's already been covered is a waste of time. And Luther discovers this and goes half insane. He thinks, we have not been teaching this. Everybody is running around thinking that they have to pay this debt, and the reality is the Bible says it's already paid. All you have to do is accept that by faith. It just turns the world upside down. And what I say is that this is everybody's story. Everybody's trying to figure out what's the meaning of life. If there's a God, is this God a glowering judge who hates me and wants to send me to hell? Or is this God a loving God? And, you know, it's one of the questions that every thinking person struggles with, wherever you come out with the answer. Luther was the man struggling with it. And I don't think anybody has ever struggled more honestly or more courageously or more passionately with this very question than Martin Luther, which is why, in some ways, it ends up being a very entertaining story, but also a very personal story, of one human being doing what most of us are doing in one way or another, trying to answer the biggest question.
So 500 years ago and 2 days is the anniversary of Martin Luther nailing the 95 Theses on the door of the Wittenberg Church in order to get a scholarly debate going about indulgences, which he said it's not fair.
Yeah, I mean, that's how the whole thing started. Yeah. It started very innocuously.
He
never expected that it would turn into, an earth-shaking conflagration.
Right. 4 years later, he finally appears before the papal delegate at the Diet of Worms, and they say, okay, here's all your stuff. In the last 4 years, you've written things like the Babylonian captivity of the church. Are you going to stand by all this stuff with the implication? Because if you do, we're going to burn it and you. And he stands up. And first, he says, give me a day to make sure everything's straight. He goes back and prays, comes back the next day.
What he really says to them is, listen, if I'm wrong, I will recant what I've said. But you have to show me where I'm wrong.
Right.
As far as I can see, what the Bible says plainly is what I have written. But if I'm wrong, show me. They refuse to show him. They exercise their power in a way that, and this happens today, where people say, you know what, the conversation's been decided, history's decided, shut up, either shut up or you're gonna be in big trouble. You know, he said, you can't shut me up. I just want to know if you can show me where I'm wrong. And if I'm wrong, I'll say I'm sorry. But they refused to do it. So he made his famous statement. Some people know it. He said, unless you show me, here I stand, I can do no other. I'm stuck, you know. And it's a famous moment because he stood up against the powers of the day. This is a humble monk standing up against the richest people in the world, the most powerful people in the world. They were all in the room. And he would not back down. And, you know, people get the impression that he was some firebrand, some chest-beating maniac or whatever. At this point, he was still very humble. And he was very respectful. Later on, once he'd been excommunicated and things kind of blew up, he became more and more outspoken and very brash. But at this point, he was just an honest, humble monk trying to figure things out. It's really fascinating because he has this reputation of being this wild man, but where it mattered, he really wasn't. And there are many things about his story, as you said at the beginning of the program, that we all think we know are true. And they're not true. Even the nailing of the 95 Theses, people have this image of him doing this, you know, in a very proud way, saying, you know, like, take that, Pope, you know, here, I'm nailing these Theses. But it was just the opposite. It was like he tacked something to a bulletin board. He had no idea that, I mean, I shouldn't even say it was like he tacked something to a bulletin board. He did tack something to a bulletin board. He was just putting up these 95 Theses as a way of saying, by the way, we'd like to have a debate on the subject of indulgences. It was written in Latin. It was for his fellow theologians. And it, in retrospect, we see it as this monumental thing that happened 500 years ago. But when he did it, he had no idea that by tacking these 95 Theses onto the bulletin board of the day, which was the castle church door, he had no idea that it would ignite, you know, everything that followed. And I have to say this, that everything we take for granted today, our freedoms, the idea of the individual against the state or the individual conscience, all of these things came from what Martin Luther did. He opened a door into the future, into the world in which we live today. That's why it's such an important story, and we really have to know the story. You can't really understand where we are today unless you understand where it came from and how it happened.
Another thing we have to remember, and that Eric points out in the book time and time again, is that Martin Luther was a man of great passion and great integrity, and he always was that way. He was that way when he was a young student. He was that way when he was a young monk. He was that way when he was, as he got older. He took things very seriously, but he also had a lighter side, and we didn't see much of that until he realized he wasn't going to be burned at the stake any minute now, and later, that he does marry an ex-nun. The manner of helping her escape from the nunnery is not quite as legend would tell us, but he does marry Katrina, and they have a great life together, and they have a great love affair. They have children, and when one of them, Elizabeth, dies, Luther's brokenhearted. This is not just a guy who, well, we got lots left, so let's have some more. It really was an awful thing for him.
Yeah, no, he was a very big-hearted person. And you really get the impression that this was a profoundly good man. He said many things he shouldn't have said, and he wrote things he shouldn't have written at the end of his life. But when you take him, when you take him all the way from the beginning to the end and you look at the life, it is an astounding story. The love that he had for his wife and what he basically did by redeeming marriage in the eyes of the world and saying that there's nothing second class about getting married versus being a celibate priest. He said there's something beautiful and noble in marriage and in having a family. And he changed so much that, when I did the research, it's overwhelming the influence he had. I have said a few times that without hyperbole, in the last 2,000 years, apart from Jesus, I cannot think of anybody who had the influence in history that Martin Luther did. It really is, it's an astounding thing. It's like there's a hinge and it turns and the whole world changes on the hinge of these events that he brought about.
Oh, exactly. You're talking about that he made marriage not a sacrament, but he said it's a serious thing, but it's a way to worship God is by having a great marriage. He says that the individual is important, and that's so critical to the way we think about things now. He's the one that said, all the professions that we have, as long as they are God-honoring, are equally valid as being a monk or a priest or a nun, which was an extraordinarily radical concept at the time. But now we kind of, among Christians, in Protestants particularly, we take that to be the kind of thing that we, of course, understand.
There's so much to it, and there's something, I won't tell the story now because it's too long, but literally in the first couple of pages of my book, people can read it in the bookstore, just if you want to read this story, but there's a miracle story. It is outrageous. When I discovered this, it's one thing I can say that is not in any other book I've ever read on Luther, and I read a lot of books on Luther, but something that marked him the day after he was born, when he was named after St. Martin of Tours. I won't tell it now, but it's one of these things that you read it. I my jaw dropped when I figured out what had happened. And as I say, it's a little too complicated to tell now, but there are a number of beautiful little things mixed into the story that I think that most people who've read the book so far have really enjoyed it. And as a writer, of course, I want people not just to buy the book or to know it exists, but to enjoy reading it, because history should be fun. And I think that the reason that I chose to write about Luther was because he really is that kind of a character. When you tell the story with all the pieces and all the characters, it is just, it's a wild and entertaining story. And it's great when history is that way, because it just makes it that much easier for us to learn. And I think this is an important story for us to know about.
Oh, absolutely. Now, you've written some biographies of some really important people, some great leaders within Christendom, Dietrich Bonhoeffer in the 20th century, William Wilberforce in the late 18th, early 19th century, almost single-handedly convinces the British Empire to stop importing slaves, and then eventually, just before his death, to outlaw slavery within the British Empire worldwide. These are men of enormous influence, guided by their Christian faith. To add Martin Luther to the pantheon of which you have written biography, this is a great way to continue that story. And like you said, Martin Luther is so influential It seems to me, I remember, it seems a couple of years ago that Time magazine gave him the designation of Man of the Millennium. I think that's,
no question.
You know, that's really accurate. I can't think of anybody, and I'm like you, I'm a history lover, but I can't think of anybody else who essentially by themselves changed so many things in so many ways as Martin Luther did.
No, there's just no doubt about it, that his story is seminal to everything that we revere today. Everything when we say today that I care about freedom of the individual, freedom of people to express themselves, and you know, I care about tolerance, you know, the idea that people can live with different ideas and not kill each other. Now, I mean, it's amazing. Now, the thing to say about Luther, though, before we close, is that unlike Wilberforce and Bonhoeffer, both of whom I would consider saintly, Luther had a side to him, you know, that proves that he was, you know, a human being. He had his flaws and his outspokenness. I've joked around that he makes Donald Trump look like Mike Pence, you know. He basically is somebody that he said some terrible things. And I think, you know, I try to deal with that. I hope I deal with that in my book, just so you understand that this was a real person. And for all of the incredible good that he accomplished, he did some things that I'm guessing, you know, he regretted or that the people around him regretted and stuff. And, you know, it's important that we know that as well.
Right. He was a real person with warts and all, and you present him that way. You show he has a very earthy side. There were things that he said that were so ribald that even growing up as a Lutheran, as I did, we still didn't hear those stories until I got to be an adult and read the table talks and found some of the language he actually used. He was a character, and yes, there are some things that he wrote toward the end of his life that were hurtful, and I'm sure if he had lived long enough that he would have regretted them. People screw up, but in the long context of his life, the things that he did right, even things that we don't even consider anymore. He's the guy that translated the Bible into German, the first vernacular translation. And German was so good that apparently that's still the translation that they use in German.
Yeah, well, you know? He practically created the German language because at that time there were dialects all over what we think of as Germany today. There was no one unified German.
Right.
And
right.
Luther, in a funny way, helped create a unified language. And his book, The Bible, became so popular. I mean, every family had one. Every family didn't have any other books. So they learned to read. They learned the language from that book. I mean, all of that. There is just so much congregational singing. I mean, we think, oh, yeah, I sing in church. We sing in church. Who doesn't? Well, before Luther, nobody did. He introduces the idea, can you imagine, of singing hymns, of the congregation singing and worshiping. That didn't exist before. And you think, is it possible? Yes, it did not exist. And today, it exists in many Catholic churches. It's ironic that, of course, the Catholic Church over the centuries adopted some of the reforms that Luther was talking about 500 years ago. So it really, there's just so much to it.
Well, Eric, like you said, this is a larger-than-life kind of guy, and we could talk for another 30 minutes easily about Martin Luther. Unfortunately, our time is up, and I want to say thanks so very much. I know you're in the middle of a book tour, and your publicist was very conscientious in continuing to work with you and me to set up a time that we could talk, and I'm so grateful that we were able to do so.
I'm thrilled. I want to make sure I mention the book again, since the publisher will shoot me if I don't.
Absolutely.
The book is just called Martin Luther, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World. Of course, I'm Eric Metaxas. But, I hope people will find the book in their local bookstore or online and read it. It's a fun and informative story.
Absolutely. Eric, thank you again for joining us again on The Bookshelf. I hope to talk to you again the next time you have a book out.
Thanks so much. Okay. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless you. And if you'd like more information on the book and on Eric's other books, you can check his website, Eric Metaxas. That's ericmetaxas.com. His new book, Martin Luther, The Man Who Rediscovered God and Changed the World. It's from Viking Press. Thanks so much for joining us for this monumental weekend. 2 days away from the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation beginning. Check out our newly designed website on thebookshelf.biz as well. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.